Hey, I'm Amanda from Trifecta Fitness. We're proud to be Clarksville's new Get Fit headquarters. Trifecta Fitness is a state-of-the-art spin and strength training studio. Our spin studio is truly one of a kind in this area, complete with 20 state-of-the-art live fitness bikes and an incredible sound system. Our strength training is done in small groups of six or fewer, and all of our strength and spin classes are scalable for every level of experience. Come see us in the heart of Clarksville, just behind MAPCO at the corner of Old Trenton Road and Wilma Rudolph Boulevard. Call us for more info at 931-542-6265 or download our Trifecta Fitness app for a full list of upcoming classes.
In October 2019, Arlington, Texas was chosen to be the home of a new national museum, unlike any other. The National Medal of Honor Museum will be a unique home of military history. The 100,000 square foot museum will house exhibits, archives, and artifacts relating to the 3,500 U.S. troops who have been awarded the medal, the nation's highest honor for valor in combat. The museum will have 31,000 square feet of galleries dedicated to U.S. troops who have received the award. The museum CEO, former Navy SEAL and NASA astronaut Chris Cassidy, said the museum will focus on education as much as preservation. The building will have five areas dedicated to Medal of Honor winners from the Army, Marine Corps, Navy, Air Force, and Coast Guard. The main gallery will be located in a central plaza under a 25,000 square foot slab of steel, which will appear to be suspended in midair. It will be supported by five pillars. Black Rifle Coffee is a corporate sponsor of the museum, as are the Dallas Cowboys. The museum's board also includes over a dozen major corporations and six Medal of Honor recipients, including David Bellavia, Patrick Brady, and Britt Slabinski. Army Staff Sergeant Bellavia was awarded the medal for clearing an entire house by himself on November 10, 2004, as a squad leader in support of Operation Phantom Fury in Fallujah, Iraq. He killed four enemy fighters and wounded a fifth in close quarters battle. Army Major General Brady flew and coordinated the evacuation of 51 seriously wounded men during a firefight in Vietnam in January 1968. Slabinski, a Navy SEAL chief and team leader, led a rescue team of SEALs during Operation Anaconda in Afghanistan in March 2002. Slabinski and his team flew to a mountaintop ambush site to rescue Petty Officer First Class Neil Roberts, who had fallen from the back of a helicopter. Slabinski led the team through almost constant combat against an entrenched Taliban force. Along with the board members, former presidents Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama serve as honorary directors. The museum is expected to open to the public in late 2024.
This is a message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Got a question about your VA benefits, healthcare, or eligibility? Go to va.gov, where you can access a new interactive chatbot to ask questions 24/7. One can still browse va.gov for information, but you can now ask specific questions to the chatbot, like what's the PACT Act? How do I apply for disability benefits? What's my claim status? You can access the new feature through va.gov's Contact Us page. Then click on the Start Chat button. The chatbot will continue to improve veterans' access to information about the benefits and services they've earned. This is one way VA is offering seamless and secure access to its online resources.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome back.
Misfit Nation show.
We are a show founded by a veteran and hosted by two veterans and a military spouse. Our mission is to get people to tell their stories to the world. If you're an author, share your tips with the Misfit Nation. If you're a musician or an actor, our audience needs to know how they too can get into the business. Coaches, we love our coaches. Come on and share your tips with the Misfit Nation to help them become better versions of themselves. If you are a corporate leader or an entrepreneur, come on and show how you did it and how hard you have fought for success. If you are a veteran, first responder, or Gold Star family, we would love to have you come on and share your story with the Misfit Nation. we always have time for you. If you're feeling down, alone, or starting to see the darkness, stop. Think about those who are around you. You are not alone. You will be missed. If you feel like your problems will be a burden to those in your inner circle or feel embarrassed, dial 988. If you are a veteran, take option one. We need you to keep pushing forward. Don't make a permanent solution to a temporary problem. If you are a new listener, welcome to the Misfit Nation Show. Be sure to subscribe to our show on your favorite podcast app. Also on our YouTube channel at @_MisfitNation. Subscribe and click the bell to keep you up to date on our latest episodes and all of our news. You can also find us on Heroes Media Group and About Face Radio. Now, let's get to the show!
All right. Welcome back to Misfit Nation. It's our Tuesday after dinner show. We had the call in a prayer this morning to get a guest to replace our guest that was supposed to be on tonight. And our next guest jumped at the opportunity. I'm glad that he was able to. I think we tried to do this a few months ago, and this time it's finally coming to fruition. But again, for the third show in a row, before we start, let's pause and think about the Tennessee State Trooper who was killed while trying to help trying to investigate a death of a construction worker on Highway 24 today in Tennessee. Keep his family in your thoughts and your prayers, and hopefully they'll be able to find closure at some point in that tragedy. So without further ado, our next guest is an Air Force Security Forces veteran. He spent 6 years active duty with four tours overseas. He's experienced a lot during his time as a 50 cal gunner on area security operations, quick reaction force, route clearance, presence patrols. After years of dealing with mortars, IEDs, loss of his brothers, and other close calls, he started to get burnt out. In 2012, not long before he was set to rotate back to the U.S., there was an IED blast. The blast killed multiple members of an EOD team. They all had families who no longer had a father, brother, uncle, or son. That night when he got home, got back to base, he got on Skype like all of us do after missions to say hello to their families. And he got to see his daughter. And it was at that time he realized that his time in the uniform was about done. So without further ado, let's welcome Nick Ron to the Misfit Nation show. Welcome, Nick. How are you, brother?
I'm good. Sorry about the software issues before the show, buddy.
I seen you glitch in and say, oh, he's good, and then gone. Oh, so I'm not again.
Yeah, I have an external audio interface, and sometimes it's a little sketchy with StreamYard, so I have to make sure it works out right. So I'm glad you guys use StreamYard too, because it's actually a pretty good streaming service. So
yeah, I started using it. I was using Zoom, and all of my videos were coming out like those old kung fu movies, like your mouth would be moving, and then a couple seconds later, let's go to the cafeteria. And I'd be like, oh no, that's not what I want anymore. So I went to this, and it's actually pretty clean, pretty clear, and actually helps out a lot. Oh, so yeah, Nick, sure. I gave a just basically your first two sentences of your bio. Your bio is too awesome for me to read the whole thing. It's probably better told by you. And I think you need to give us a lot more about you from as far back as you want to go, why you joined the Air Force and to begin with, to how we got to where we are now.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I grew up, my dad was a Marine Corps vet. Grandpa was Navy. And, I decided to just kind of follow in their footsteps. And my dad kept telling me, oh, join the Air Force. You won't actually go to war. Sure enough, I'm the first Ron to ever actually do a tour overseas. So in the Air Force. But I mean, I wanted to be a cop. And that was probably my quickest way to becoming a cop is, you know, hey, you got 6 months of basic training. I think it was 14 weeks at the time of tech school to become security forces. And, you know, by the age of 19 years old, you know, there I was ready to go. So, you know, I was lucky enough and I guess unlucky enough to be, I've never really been good at a lot of things. If I became good at something, it's because I worked my ass off, but I was really good at shooting and they put me in a 240 and I was really good at it. My reaction times of the thing were great. And then it's like, okay, let's put them on a 50, shot to 50 kill. And you know, it worked for me in 2008 out at Yakima Shooting Center. I actually broke the record for the quickest response time and the fastest response time. I'm sorry, the fastest response time and all targets hit. And I ended up getting coined by a general, which was pretty sweet. So pretty much that kind of set my career ready to go. Like pretty much all I'm going to do is 50 cal. I was stationed over at Seymour Johnson Air Force Base, which it's more so of a deployment base. We have F-15s. So we're constantly deploying, going over and over again. I would say my first deployment, and I say that with quotes because it was Qatar. So, you know, there was it was a hard deployment sometimes because you got to walk a mile and a half to get to the gym to go to the Dairy Queen. And sometimes they're out of mint ice cream. So it was rough, man. After that deployment, I told my deployment unit manager, I'm like, dude, don't ever send me on something like that again. That was so boring. I was like, I want to do something. And then 2008, you know, they come to find out I was pretty good at shooting 50. And every deployment after that, I was a 50 cal gunner. So ended up going to Iraq twice, doing convoys. My second deployment, we were actually doing base security. And fourth deployment, I was out in Afghanistan doing air security operations, convoys, route clearance, stuff like that. So, yeah, like you said in the bio, that blasting that's happening. We weren't on that mission, but we knew those EOD guys. They had come on a few times on a couple IEDs that we had found, and it just got me thinking, like, I got to get the hell out of here. You know, with how addicted I was to deploying, it's just a matter of time, you know. And so I ended up getting out in 2012 and, you know, decided to start a new life as a civilian. But as many veterans figure out, it's not easy. It was a rough transition for me. Ended up doing my first 6 months or my first year. I was a bouncer downtown Minneapolis. You know, I'm not a huge guy at the time. I was about 200 pounds. I'm 6'2", 6'1", is, you know, about 6 feet tall now after my neck surgery. did that for about a year, but, you know, after, you know, multiple different things, I just decided that's not a good life. Lucky enough, shortly after, I ended up getting a job at the Minnesota State Patrol, and I was a 911 dispatcher for 8 years. And after that, it was during my time with the State Patrol. I was still struggling pretty bad at that moment. And in 2015, ended up leading to a suicide attempt. I was an alcoholic and just hated my life. And I wasn't doing anything to make it better. I was doing what a lot of vets do that are in that situation, doing the exact opposite of what I should be doing. I was secluding myself. I stopped training jujitsu. And I just separated myself from everybody. And, you know, eventually after the suicide attempt, I called my jujitsu instructor and told him, like, hey, he was going to Brazil to get his black belt. And I'm like, can I go with you? So I went to Brazil and ended up training jujitsu down in Brazil and decided I wanted to fight MMA again. I had done one fight in the military in 2009 and I beat a Marine, by the way. So Air Force is better than Marines. Just saying. A lot of Marines can be. So I started fighting MMA and I figured that was going to be my vehicle. That was going to be how I'm going to get myself out of this funk. And it was doing a lot for me. And then I ended up breaking my neck in 2016. And that's when I had a big pause put on my life. I was told that it was going to be difficult for me to learn how to walk because I had a pretty intensive spinal surgery. Cause I had two vertebrae that were about a quarter inch turned. Oh. And I had the disc that was completely popped out and pinched off my nerve. And I lost about an inch and a half of muscle mass on my right arm. So I couldn't even lift a 5 pound dumbbell, man. It was bad. And I decided that, you know what? I'm tired of outside forces controlling my life. I'm going to heal from the surgery and I'm going to get better. And it was right about that time. This was only about 6 months after my suicide attempt. I'd already had one fight back. My first fight was in December. I ended up winning in like a minute and 13 seconds with an arm bar. And, I wanted to prove to people that jiu-jitsu is still one of the best martial arts in MMA. And I ended up finishing out my career. I was only 4-2, but I had 3 submission victories, which that's pretty sweet, right? So 2016, I started doing studies on epigenetics, neuroscience, brain activity. I started really digging into mental health because, you know, not being able to fight, not being able to do what I love, that was making me start to go back down to where I was in 2015. So I decided to do as much as I can to learn why is my brain making me feel the way it's making me feel. So I dug into everything involved, you know, with suicide, depression, PTSD, you know, veterans and suicide crisis. Like I said, epigenetics, neuroscience, just trying to learn the chemicals of the brain and how can I change this without drugs? And eventually got to the point where I started meditating. I found Buddhism. I am not a Buddhist. I swear too much and I like meat. So you're never going to see me in a full monk robe anytime soon. But I like some of the theories from it, right? So a lot of it has to do with, you know, with peace and love and inner peace and finding yourself. And I realized I didn't know who the hell I was. And it wasn't just reading about Buddhism that got me to that point. There was many, many other books and a bunch of other stuff. Eventually, I started to decide, like, I don't know who I am. And I thought at the time I was an MMA fighter. I thought that's what I was supposed to do. At that time, I was only 2-0, and I started focusing on meditation. Meditation is something that I realized really helped me find myself, because what you're doing when you're meditating, you're just going internal, right? A lot of people tend to be like, think meditation is like woo-woo or whatever, but what are you doing, you know, for the Christians out there, what are you doing when you're praying, right? You're talking to God. When you're meditating, all you're doing is you're talking to yourself. It's the only difference, right? So the more I learned about, you know, certain triggers and certain things that were popping around in my head, I learned how to control them. And the more I learned how to control my thoughts, the more I learned, you know, like, you know what, I can be and do whatever I want. And so after my surgery in April of 2016 in my neck, I told the doctor, I was like, I'm going to fight again this year. They're like, you're not fighting for at least 2 years. I'm like, watch me. And so I meditated every day. I started doing my own PT. And a month and a half after my surgery, I went in for my checkup. I had pulled out all my staples out of my neck because they were like rubbing on my spine. So I grabbed a pliers and just ripped them out because they're pissing me off, man. And the wound was healed. I didn't do it super early, but I think it took me about a month before I'm like, yeah, these got to go. And I go in there for my appointment. They do my MRI and the doctor sits me down and goes, what did you do? And I'm like, oh God, what did I do? He's like, no, you're 100% healed. He's like, your neck looks stronger than it was before. And I'm like, sweet. And I was like, can I fight again? He's like, I don't want to say this, but yes, like you're cleared to fight. And so in August of 2016, I had my first fight back and ended up winning fight of the night. And me and this guy beat the living piss out of each other. And unfortunately, the organization who was recording it lost the recording, which is really annoying. But I have it on my Facebook, which is pretty sweet. So in the third round, the first and second round, we're just beating each other to death. And my jiu-jitsu was way better. So in the jujitsu world, pulling guard is kind of like a, you know, that's kind of weak. Like, come on, don't pull guard. Pulling guard in an MMA fight is idiotic, right? Because if somebody is in your guard, it's real easy from the ground and pound. But for me, I pulled guard and right away I swept him, got on top and bah, bah, bah. And everyone's like, what is he doing? But it worked, you know? In the third round, right as the round started, the bell rang. I walk out, we high five. I was like, hey, let's knock each other out. And I'm smiling. And this guy's like, this guy's crazy. You know, I'm actually good friends with him now, which is great. And he's like, dude, every time I hit you, you smiled. And he's like, it just took my soul. I'm like, well, it's fun, man. Like, I'm not supposed to be fighting anymore. Like, I'm getting to do what I love. This is amazing. And then about 10 seconds into the round, I hit him with a left hook and he drops. I jump on his back and I choke him out and I win. And then a couple months later, I get a title shot. Ended up losing, unfortunately, which is fine. But, you know, I got to do a title shot. That was my main goal. I just wanted to get to a title. Never ended up getting a title, which is fine. Did some gym hopping and everything. And still throughout all of this, I was still digging internally, right? I really wanted to know who I was. In 2018, and I'm getting knocked out. And I've had to date now, I've had about 15 pretty bad concussions. Four of them are classified as TBIs. Well, five, because the one in December technically was. So I've had five TBIs now, and I realized that I can't keep taking this damage in my brain. So I decided to quit. Long, long story short, when I went to Brazil, I just so happened to meet a Brazilian hot rod model, and she flew to the United States a couple months later. We ended up getting married. And this was in 2016, we got married. 2018, about 2 weeks after my fight, I started to dive into a little bit of a depression again. And about 2 weeks later, she left me about 4 days after she got her green card. So that was a big punch in the gut. So I gave myself about a week to just be depressed, to just not try to do anything to fix it. But at that 2 week mark, I was like, all right, figure it out. I decided I didn't want to fight anymore. I quit martial arts altogether, but I kept diving into this theory of I can control my thoughts. I can control how I feel. I don't need to be depressed. I don't need to be that person that I hate. So I decided from that point on, I'm going to continue to grow. Now, by that time, I had created what I call the six principle process. The six principle process is what I use with Warriors Next Adventure to help veterans pretty much reevaluate their life to figure out what are some areas that I really need to focus on? What are some areas that I'm weak? What are some areas that I'm strong? And then how can we reframe a lot of the memories of the past to actually, you know, either let go of some of that power that the past has over us and create a new life, essentially like a VHS tape. Let's record over everything, right? Let's get some new memories and new experiences in there. So after that, I ended up started to travel. I went to Sturgis, accidentally partied with a bunch of Hells Angels one night. That's another story. It was a good night, but they were all veterans. And, you know, I'm sitting here talking to these guys, partying, having fun. I may or may not have forgotten what happened that night. But I woke up the next morning and I got a text message that said, hey, meet us at One Eye Jack's. And so we go down there. And these guys are like, hey, and I'm like, oh my God. I was like, guys, I don't remember anything from last night. They're like, seriously? And so there may or may not be a video of me jumping on a stripper pole and pushing a stripper back saying, move, I got this. And so after I watch the video, we start talking and I tell them why I'm there. And like, it's kind of like a vision quest kind of thing. I was like, I'm just trying something new. I was like, I'm going through a divorce and I'm not happy. And I'm trying to find out like, what is happiness? There's a movie called Hector and the Search for Happiness. And I saw this right before I decided to go to Sturgis. And long story short, he's a therapist that realizes he doesn't understand what happiness is and he thinks he can't help his clients. So he goes on this big quest all around the world. And it inspired me to travel. And that's when Sturgis happened. And then a couple months later, and I'm going to Hawaii. When I got a divorce, I had about 60,000 points on a credit card. And I was like, you know what? Divorce present, going to Hawaii. And every single day, I ended up renting a Subaru and I brought a tent and I just camped all around the island. I camped on top of the mountains. It's called Olamola Three Peaks. I camped right up at the top. And every single day I ended up getting in conversations and it always happened to be veterans. Every time I started talking to these guys, I would tell them why I was there and the conversation would get to this point. And I would start telling them about my suicide attempt and how, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to fix me. And I started realizing that every time I would have a conversation like this, the other people would start opening up about their suicide attempts or their depression or all of the things that they were struggling with. And that's when I was like, I got it. Vulnerability is the issue. That's the key. The key to helping somebody fix themselves is being vulnerable with them and letting them share their story. But you have to build an environment for them to share their story, right? Especially with vets, because a lot of us don't want to talk. So shortly after that, I started sharing my six principles with other veterans. And I realized that my process that I built for myself, it's working for other people. And my last night in Hawaii, I ended up meeting up with two friends that I went to high school with. And I told them my whole story. I told them everything from the beginning to the end. And both of them looked at me like, you gotta start a blog or something. And so about a week later, I started Warriors Next Adventure. It was just a website with a blog. And about 3 weeks after that, I decided, you know what? I'm going to go climb Eagle Mountain here in Minnesota. Not really a mountain. It's like 3 miles up, or it's 3 miles round trip, and it's maybe like 500 feet in elevation gain. It's pretty small. It's like 2,000 feet. And I took six other veterans with me, and I did what I was doing while I was traveling. I shared my story because these guys didn't know. At this time, I had never publicly talked about my suicide attempt. Nobody knew. And except for one person, but I'll rewind to that in a second. So I ended up taking these guys up there. I shared my story, told them about my suicide attempt and my depression, my PTSD and everything that I was struggling with. Every single one of these guys opened up about a time that they were depressed. They were suicidal. And I started giving them advice, you know, things that I did to get myself over the hump. And every one of them within an hour after that, you know, when we got home and everything, had sent me a text and said, that was one of the most healing hikes I've ever had. I'm like, this is what I need to do. So about 3 months later, Warriors Next Adventure 501c3 was formed. And we've been taking vets mountain climbing. We ended up getting race cars. We had a wolf sanctuary for quite some time, which was awesome, but ended up closing down, unfortunately. And then every year we take 13 veterans to Colorado on a 6-day mental health retreat where we utilize the six principle process. We train jujitsu, we do equine therapy, We do comedy. We climb a mountain. And the whole time, every single night, we sit by a fire and we go over the process. Every day, we pick a different one. And then I give them homework. And we also have a dirt track racing program where we take vets to go work on cars. We have two cars right now. We have a Hornet, which is just like four bangers, you know, just four cylinders. And then we're building a street stock right now. It's a 350 Chevy. And it's a 78 Monte Carlo body, I believe. I might be wrong in the year. So veterans get to work on these cars, but they also get to race. We let veterans race the Hornet. And to date, I think we've had 19 veterans race with us. We've taken a little over 75 veterans to climb mountains. And December of 2019, we started in April 2019. December of 2019, I decided to start the WNA crisis line. And to date, we've had 124 veterans call the crisis line, and they're all still alive. So now I've had about 19 years of crisis intervention work, and I've never lost one. So in a nutshell, that's who I am, and that's how I got to where I'm at.
And that's something to be proud of. Every step along the way, you hit the nail on the head. You learn lessons everywhere you go. And you're a quick learner. With shooting, you were able to learn the complexity of the 240 and the 50 pretty easily. And a lot of people just give up the first time they shoot it and it sprays. And I'm not going to keep trying to follow where that bullet goes. I have to stay with it. And that's something that a lot of people just quit when they do. So kudos to you for staying with both of those beautiful, antiquated weapons now, I guess. But the 50 has been around since my dad was in Vietnam. Well, actually, probably before him, the 50 was around. The 240 is the predator, the successor of the 60, first weapon. So I had that pig. That was the first weapon I was handed when I came in the Army.
That's I actually got to shoot the 60 at a training exercise. I got to shoot the 60. That was fun. Weapon. The 240 weapon. is much more proficient.
Yes.
But I don't know why. I like that 60. That was fun.
Yeah. And then now you started Warriors Next Adventures almost on accident, because it's something that helped you, and you wound up helping those first six dudes. And now it's 75 dudes later, you're still helping them. And now you have the hotline, you got your garden as well, the business. You didn't even speak about that in your talk here. So you have a business, you have your nonprofit, and you have the hotline, you have lots of stuff going on. You're still helping people, but in the back of all this, you're actually helping yourself as well.
Because 100%.
You have found your purpose. You have found your calling to what you're really supposed to be doing. And that's the thing a lot of us lose when we take them boots off the last time. We lose that purpose. Yeah. And I think you have found it 100%.
Well, that's the three pillars of Warriors Next Adventure is purpose, adventure, and camaraderie, right? Those are the three things that we all miss, right? Because every time we go out on a mission, we're going on an adventure with our buddies, right? And we have a purpose to come home. And now what we got to do is we have to recreate that, right? But in a different sense. The problem with a lot of veterans is a lot of them, I break life down into four sections, right? You got 0 to 25, 26 to 50, so on and so forth. Most veterans get out of the military at the end of their first life, about 24, 25-ish, right? The majority of them are starting their second life walking backwards, because we're always focused on the past. We're focused on the military, right? This is how we did it in the military. You know, I don't know how many veterans tell me that they were talking about military stuff in job interviews, and they're like, ugh, nobody wants to hear it. Now, there's a lot of things that are good to take away from the military, and I'm not saying anyone should ever not be proud of their service. I'm proud of my service. But we need to create a new life once we get out. We need to figure out who are we now. Right? Who are we now, and who do we want to be? Right? So there's three different levels that we have to look at, right? Who was I at this point? Who am I now? Right? And who do I want to be in the future? Right? I tell people all the time, the person who could have saved me in 2015, I don't think they existed. So I decided to create that person for myself. I wasn't doing it for anyone else. I was trying to create that person for myself. I want to become that person who could have pulled that gun out of my hands. And the beautiful thing is, you know, life works in mysterious ways, because in 2020, just over 5 years after my suicide attempt, I got a call on my crisis line. And I remember it was on Halloween night. I've just gotten done trick or treating. And I got a call on the crisis line saying, you know, he's got a gun and he's going to kill himself. I got his address from him, found out he's two blocks from my house. What are the odds of that? He didn't know me. He doesn't know where I live. So I go to his house, and I just want to preface this. Don't do this, people. All right. I'm trained. I know what I'm doing. I've been in law enforcement for 14 years, not anymore, but 14 years of law enforcement, 19 years of crisis intervention. So I know what I'm doing. I was lucky enough to take a hostage negotiation class, active shooter and neurolinguistic programming class taught by the FBI while I was in the military. Great class. One of the best classes I've ever had. And so I utilize these tactics all the time. And then everything I learned at dispatch to just add everything onto it. So I go to his house and I go up to his van. He's sitting in the driver's seat. And I go over, I jump in the passenger seat and I tell him, I'm like, listen, if you're going to kill yourself, you're going to do it with me in the car. And he looked at me like, this guy crazy? I'm like, listen, man, I tried to kill myself in 2015. I didn't have anybody. I was like, you have me, but you owe me a conversation. And so we talked for about 45 minutes. And my goal, now I'm a stand-up comedian as well, right? So I have the nonprofit, loving, caring guy, and then I got the goofball that jokes about everything. My goal with every single person that I have on the crisis line, if I can get them to laugh within 15 minutes, I got them, right? And I've made every single one of these guys laugh within 15 minutes. That is always my goal, right? I take a very different approach than 911, than counselors and therapists. I'm one of you. One of us, right? We have that correlation. We have that recognition that, hey, I'm just like you. To top it off with my suicide attempt, I know where they're at and I know how they feel. They feel like the world is crumbling and the world would be better off without them. You have to show them that that is not true. You have to show them, hey, I love you and I don't want to lose a brother. And so this is an extremely, extremely personal thing that I do with Warriors Next Adventure. I go right back to my suicide attempt every time I get a crisis call. And it was hard at first, you know, to come out of that because I'm essentially re-traumatizing myself every time I go through this. However, I've gotten so good at figuring out how I need to unwind after that and then come back. And so it just works. And I get this guy to laugh within 10, 15 minutes. We talk for about 45 minutes and then we really start digging into the problem. My process is stop the bleeding, right? Get them out of crisis, make them laugh, make them figure out what is the key issue, and then give them hope. Those are the four steps that I use, right? Once they understand the problem, they always start crying every time. And I've never had one not cry on the phone with me. I don't care who you are. I don't care what's going on. If you are suicidal and you're at that point of potential suicide, when you really start digging at the problem, it's going to drastically affect your emotions. After that, you have to let them know that it's going to be okay. There's a book called Man's Search for Meaning by Dr. Viktor Frankl. Anyone in the mental health world who hasn't read that book, how dare you? I think everyone should read that book. Dr. Viktor Frankl was a... he's a psychotherapist. He was in Auschwitz in World War II. And what he started doing is studying everyone who was dying and studying everybody who was thriving, right? I say thriving in quotes because how can you really thrive in Auschwitz? But he started realizing that all the people that ended up dying were the ones that gave up hope. The ones that would die of starvation, overworking, you know, just exhaustion. He started realizing that a lot of these people were losing hope. The ones that were thriving were the ones that made suffering their purpose in life. Their purpose is to suffer through this so they can live later, right? And sometimes we have to understand that there is always hope. We just need somebody to help us find it. And so that's essentially what I do with Warrior's Next Adventure. Once I helped him get to a point where he realized that there is hope for a better future, there can be a separate life. And a lot of it has to do with sharing my story with them. So they understand, like, listen, I'm not just a guy trying to tell you not to do this. I'm a guy saying I've been in your seat. And I've done it. I've gotten to this point. And about 45 minutes in the conversation, he started crying and I leaned over and I gave him a hug and I slipped the gun out of his hands. We ended up going back to his house, taking all of his guns, and I kept him in my safe, my basement, took him to the VA, and he did a 72-hour hold. And then I put him in a program called RRTP. There's a lot of VAs in the country that have this program. I think it's a 30 to 60 day are the options. Intensive inpatient program for mental health and for addiction. And he went to that. And then I worked with him for about 6 months after that. Now, a lot of it is phone calls, you know, because we talk to vets all around the country. So I can't just go pick up everybody. But we got together a few times, went to lunch. We went on hikes. And that's where we really do all the personal work. everybody in Minnesota is lucky enough to actually get me to go to their house and do the work with them. I take some guys to the gym. We lift weights. We go on a hike. We go do meditation. We have a jiu-jitsu program with our nonprofit where I actually take veterans to my gym. I'm a brown belt in jiu-jitsu, so I take them and I give them an intro class. If they like it, then we pay for their first month, and then we give them a gi, which saves them about $240. So the main thing is, right, the hope, the purpose, right? And this can be used in many different things. It doesn't have to be jiu-jitsu. It doesn't have to be weightlifting. It doesn't have to be race cars. It can be whatever your thing is. You have to find a mission, right? The mission is our purpose. And so what is your mission? And the one thing that I ask most of these guys, what's your purpose in life? Not one of them have an answer.
Right.
Right. Because usually once you get to that suicidal point, it's often because you lose purpose. You know, it's usually a relationship, homelessness, or addiction. Those are the three things, right? Or obviously mental health, PTSD. Those are the main four things that I tend to notice with veterans. And if I can give them one of those things, it makes life a lot easier for them. Now, purpose is something that for me tends to be pretty simple to see what that person needs. To date, from starting, I think it was 2020, was my first nonprofit startup after WNA. I had a vet call the crisis line. He had just had his leg amputated. He got hurt in the Air Force. He was a firefighter, and then got out, got a job as a firefighter, and then he hurt his knee again. And he was addicted to opiates for about, I can't remember, I think it was 5 years. And then he finally went to the VA and said, just cut it off. Yeah, I can't do this anymore. So he was actually laying in bed after the surgery, and he was suicidal. And he just started Googling, you know, veteran nonprofits, and Warriors Next Adventure popped up. And so we start talking. And by the end of the conversation, I asked him, what's your purpose in life? And he's like, just sat there in silence. You know, I never say anything after I ask that question. I want to hear them. I want them to think about it. And after a few minutes, he's like, man, I have no idea. And I was like, what do you love? He's like, well, I love fishing. I was like, tell me about fishing. And so he goes on all these stories. The guy told me like 20 stories about fishing and all these great adventures. I'm like, okay, you're 100% permanent total. You have Social Security, right? That's about $5,600 a month, depending on where you live. What are you going to do with that? He's like, what do you mean? I was like, what are you going to do with that freedom? You have financial freedom right now. You're not going to be rich with that, but what are you going to do with it? And I'm like, how about starting a veteran fishing nonprofit? I don't have any contacts in Florida at the moment. Why don't you start something down there and I'll help you out? He's like, man, are you crazy? You know, and the funny thing, he sounds like Larry the Cable Guy, my buddy Steve. Shout out to Steve. So he's like, man, are you crazy? He starts going off on this hillbilly twang. And I'm like, bro, let's talk next week. Think about it. He calls me back a week later. He's like, dude, X22 Adventures. I got it. Let's go. And so I helped him start his nonprofit, and he's taken a little over like 500 veterans fishing. The guy told me he's only raised like $25,000 since 2020, and he's taken that many veterans fishing. It's amazing, right? Since then, I've started 25 nonprofits around the country. The vast majority of them are for veterans, not all of them. But now I have my fingers in all of those nonprofits, right? I don't run those nonprofits. I don't work at those nonprofits at all. But what I do is I help advise them. I help teach them like, hey, this is what you need to do. This is how you raise money. This is how you get sponsors, taxes, stuff like that. Now, I don't do taxes because that federally, I can get in a lot of trouble there. I get them to get connected with a CPA. But now every single veteran that they help, that's me throwing a rock in the water. That's a ripple. Right. Every stone that I throw is a new nonprofit. Every veteran that I help, that's a new ripple, because every single veteran that anyone impacts, not just me, any nonprofit, if you affect a veteran's life in a positive way, there's so many ripples that come off of that one stone. Right. And I've seen so many veterans now since, I think to date, we've interacted with a little over 40,000 veterans since 2019. And directly, it's got to be, I don't have a number, it's over 1,000. That we've had one-on-one conversations with. Now I'm the one doing most of the work. I have a couple guys, my VP, he's actually with the vet right now, which is great. I got two board members that are kind of silent, but they're the ones that help me make sure the nonprofit stays safe. And then all the checks and balances go through them just to make sure everything's running ethically. And then I have an ambassador program. I got about 7 ambassadors right now, and each one has a different job. Some of them are just getting me connected to social media. Not social media, sorry. getting me connected to media outlets. Like multiple interviews have been because of my ambassadors have reached out and said, hey, this nonprofit, this guy is awesome. Go interview him. Right. Not to like pat myself in the back or anything, but I got a couple other guys that their only job is to tell veterans about what we do and get connected. So as the nonprofit go on, every nonprofit's going to evolve from where it started, right? Initially, we were just going to go hiking, and then it got to the wolf sanctuary, then race cars, and then just kept going. And I started realizing a lot of these vets don't have their VA claims. So by 2019, I had never done a VA claim, and I'm telling vets to go get help, and I never helped myself. And it's like, okay. So I finally did it and eventually got to 100% permanent total because the VA doesn't like when you try to kill yourself, I guess. Once I ended up getting that, you know, it just opened me up. So now I don't work. I just help vets. It's all I do. You know, like just this week, I picked up a vet from the hospital who was in there for drug use. And I helped him out, you know, and I'm not going to go on with what I did because I don't like to talk about what I do for vets because it's their story, not mine. But now I'm free to do whatever I need to do, right? If I get a crisis call, I could jump in the truck and go. You know, the only thing that stops me is if I have my kids or whatever, but I got a very supportive girlfriend who really helps out a lot. And I've left her with my kids quite a few times. So she's extremely helpful and makes this, I wouldn't have the impact I have without her. And the main goal is once you start seeing these guys start to make changes, it's the best feeling in the world. Knowing that you've had a positive impact on someone's life. It's almost like my affirmation that I deserve to be here still. So like you said, every veteran I help, I help myself. So it's just like saving myself from pulling that gun in my hands every time.
Definitely. You're the fifth or sixth veteran I've had on here that was within the 2 pounds of pressure of losing their lives. Yeah. And every one of you, there was a divine intervention somewhere in there. Some force made it not happen. With you as a dud round or misfire. I had one where his son opened a door as he was about to do it in the closet. Yeah. I had one that he was in the woods and he thought someone was talking to him and stopped. And everyone has that every one of them, one of you guys has had that aha moment right at the time when it was about to go to the darkness, the astute darkness right there. And every one of you have taken that step to come back to be better, to be stronger, kind of like the $6 million man. I can be better, rebuild you and do things better and try to help others. Everyone that I've talked to has tried to do that and become better for not just themselves, but for their community. And your community basically is the veteran community. And those basically that touch it, the tentacles that touch the veteran community. And that's something that you can look in the mirror every morning and say, I'm doing a good job. And that's something everyone that's in the audience right now can say, this is who I want to be like too. I want to be the guy that can wake up in the morning and say, how many people can I help today? And that's outstanding.
Well, something that I like to ask people all the time, and I'll ask you, we'll play a game for a second. Who is your hero?
My dad.
Why is that?
Because he was always there for other people. He always, no matter who you were, he would put his hand out, help you up. He wouldn't give you stuff. He'd give you that hand up to make sure that you found your way forward and became the right person you were supposed to be.
I like that. That's good. There's never really any wrong answer here, but I always like to ask the question, why isn't it you?
That's a good question.
So something I like to tell people all the time, you know, like back in 2015, I didn't have a hero, right? There was nobody there for me. You know, there's plenty of people I could have called, right? There's a lot of people that have heard me talk about this and they're like, hey, you could have called me. I'm like, nah, I know. There's a bunch of people I could have called. There's a bunch of people that would have been there for me like that. But in my head, nobody was there for me, right? So I decided to create my own hero and then become that person. And now I get to do, and I don't sit here and think like I'm my hero right now, but me 5 years from now, you know, with everything that I've done in the last 5 years, April will be 5 years since I started this nonprofit. God, the amount of work that I've done in 5 years. I cannot wait until 5 years from now because that guy's awesome and I cannot wait to be him. And I continuously recreate that pattern. Every time I accomplish something, I'm like, okay, what's next? Right. And some people tend to say I need to slow down, stuff like that. But no, I'm not supposed to be here. Right. I statistically should be dead. there's no reason why that gun should not have gone off, right? But I'm lucky enough to still be here, right? So I'm going to take advantage of everything. And so after my suicide attempt, I decided I'm going to do every single thing I've ever wanted to do. And I've done it. I've done everything. Like, I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I started the nonprofit in 2021. I decided to quit my job at the State Patrol. I had just gotten 80%. So I'm like, it's only $2,000 a month, but I mean, screw it. Let's see what happens. So I quit and ended up driving a bus around the country for 45 days, filming a documentary called PTSD versus Jiu-Jitsu that I'm still editing, unfortunately. And I met thousands of people, thousands of amazing people, and I got to spread my message. And to this day, I still get messages from people that I met on those tours, you know, saying, hey, man, I saw you do this. Like, it's so inspirational. This is what I started doing since I met you. I'm like, yes, I love it. I love it. I love being a cheerleader for other people. And I ended up getting cancer in 2021. At this time, I was a carpenter and I lost my job. And after my surgery, I decided, you know what? I'm never going to work for anyone again. So I started a company called Invoke Change, right? So we do motivational speaking. I decided that I was going to be a motivational speaker. It's something I had been wanting to do for a long time, but I finally felt like I was ready. And, you know, I've done hundreds of speeches now, and I've gotten booked by Comcast, by 3M, by, I just booked a gig for the Air Force. I'm finally hitting the Air Force active duty. So I can't say where I'm going yet. Technically, I've been told to keep it quiet for now, but I'm going up for about 5 days and I'll be speaking to about 4,500 airmen. I cannot wait to go talk to those guys. But my theory was, let's try to get them before they get out, before the issues start, right? Let's start planting seeds now. So I'm finally hitting that point. And I've already spoke for the Air Force a few times. And I've had a lot of pretty amazing conversations with a lot of amazing people. And the beauty is, I see change in people constantly. And I will always be someone's biggest cheerleader. I will always be the guy like, yes, I love success. Shortly after that, I started a business called Warriors Workshop. I've been a carpenter my whole life, and I decided, you know what, screw it. I'm going to start my own carpenter company. And it's been pretty successful. You know, I don't struggle with money, which is nice. And then I just recently I'm working on opening a dispensary downtown St. Paul. Now, marijuana just got legalized here in Minnesota, and the market is just, it's so profitable, right? And I'm so tired of not having the money to do the things that I want to do with the nonprofit. So what we're going to end up doing is we're opening up, and I'm sole owner, and my VP is actually going to be my GM, which, you know, I love the guy. He's literally my go-to. Shout out to Josh. So once we open up, the space that we're getting is way too big. It's 2,800 square feet. We don't need that space for a dispensary. So we're taking 650 square feet, and I'm going to be donating that to the nonprofit. So I'll be paying out of pocket for the nonprofit's actual office. The good thing is it's got its own side door, so it will be completely its own space. We're going to put up walls and everything. So I recently started doing meetings with Vets Court. Are you familiar with Vets Court?
Yes.
Yeah. So a lot of Vets Courts people, they have to do like 3 social gatherings a week. But I went down to Vets Court and I gave a speech to the judge in front of the whole court. And I talked to all the veterans, and the majority of them were struggling to find groups. So once the store opens, we're going to be starting a Vets Court group, right? So it'll be a group where Vets Courts people can come in and get their social group time. But I'm essentially going to do the same thing that I do with WNA. We're going to help them find out, what's your purpose? You know, why do you continue to go down the bad road, and how can we get you back on course? We have a men's group that we do. We open it up to all men in the community because, like I said, a lot of my troopers who aren't veterans, I say, man, I wish we had a group like yours. I'm like, well, why can't we? Screw it. Let's do a men's group. And so we started the men's group, and that's been super successful. Since we started that, we talk about entrepreneurship, mental health, suicide prevention, relationships, all that stuff. The number one rule in the men's group, this is not a woman's bashing group. We're not going to sit here and just hate on women, because that's not going to fix anything. We're working on starting a woman's group, but I'm struggling to find a female vet to lead it. So hopefully soon we'll find one and we'll get someone to run that. On top of that, we're going to be doing drug addiction and alcohol addiction classes. And I got a vet that I'm trying to get to move to Minnesota. Hopefully I get him up here. But he wants to do art therapy. So we'll have art therapy. Comcast is donating 3 computers to us. So I have a computer station for vets downtown St. Paul. There's a lot of homeless vets in Minnesota. And we want to get them access to the internet so they can do what they need to do there. And they can come hang out. And then we're going to be selling a lot of our merchandise in the actual store itself to help raise money for the nonprofit. And the sales margins for dispensaries right now are unbelievable. So I'll be making enough to where I can donate $50,000 to $100,000 a year to the nonprofit. And the end game for WNA is to have a ranch, right? You get a lot of these nonprofits that have ranches, which is great, right? What I want to do is I want to have a ranch where it's going to be a retreat, essentially. So the retreat that we do in Colorado, it's 6 days. It's pretty intense because I put them through a lot of stuff and I make them dig into some memories that aren't so fun to talk about. I want to start doing that monthly here in Minnesota. So what I plan on doing is having two outbuildings, 60 by 100 feet. One of them is going to have a garage in there so we could do the race cars. We can work on cars. If vets want to rent out a stall, they can rent that out for free. We'll have a carpentry shop in the back because I've been a carpenter since I was 16. We're going to be teaching woodworking classes out there. And then the upstairs above the carpentry shop, we're going to have a podcast studio. We're going to have a meeting room. We could do big gatherings. The next building is going to be a full weightlifting gym and a jiu-jitsu gym. Outside, we're going to have gardens. We're going to teach veterans how to garden because I got quite the green thumb, believe it or not. And then we're going to have goats and chickens and eventually horses and stuff like that. So this place is going to be a place where vets can like, you know what? I just need to get away for the weekend. And I want to build a bunkhouse out there too with like 15 different rooms so we can have a bunch of vets up there whenever they want with a full kitchen and everything. So that's the end game. And I keep running into money, you know. So starting this business, you know, I learned about business through running the nonprofit. I didn't know anything about business when I started. And the more and more I run the nonprofit, the more I figured out business. I figured out marketing. I figured out all this stuff. So like I think we have just under 13,000 followers on WNA Facebook page, which is pretty good, you know, for a fairly solo act, you know. So starting the store it's really going to give me the money to really make some changes. And the goal is to have enough employees to where I don't actually have to be there. So I'd like the GM to run it so I can just run the nonprofit full time and we actually have money to do what we need to do.
I mean, I think you just summed up where your next 5 years will be. And you said, yep. You don't want to look at myself in 5 years and say, I'm proud of that guy. You can look at yourself right now and say, 5 years, that's what I'm going to have and be proud of what I already am and where I'm going to be 5 years from there. So I think that's everything you've said so far has got everyone with their jaws open in the chat right now saying it's amazing, great story. Don't quit. Don't slow down. Keep being you. And there's one thing you didn't even talk about. You set out on a trip across the Atlantic Ocean and a rowboat with the other dudes, right? And what happened there?
Yeah, so I'm an adventure athlete. I like to do crazy shit. I like to test myself. And I don't remember how long ago it was, but I was doing a podcast. I have a podcast called Warriors Next Adventure Podcast. It's usually about mental health, comedy, again, because I'm a comedian. So, I mean, I say a lot of off the wall stuff. But we also interview a lot of nonprofits, right? Because I want to use my platform to help other nonprofits that may be a little smaller to get a bigger voice. And I was interviewing Bryant. Yeah, I'm absolutely an adrenaline junkie. That's for sure. I was interviewing Bryant. He was the founder of Fight or Die. And so I heard a story about some goofballs who bought a boat and tried to row across the Atlantic Ocean. I'm like, these guys are idiots. And that's the first thing that I thought. I'm like, why would anyone do this? So I did the podcast with him. And the whole time, two of my ambassadors and one of my board members was listening to the whole thing. And within 20 minutes of that podcast ending, all three of them had sent me a message. Like, dude, this is crazy. And the next thing you know, Chad's saying, hey, man, I contacted Fight or Die. They said if we got a team together, we can row the ocean. I'm like, no, I'm not doing it. No, this is stupid. I'm not doing that. And after about a month and a half of him just grinding it at me, I have a saying with this nonprofit called Explore Everything. All right. If you're suicidal and you want to kill yourself, you got to explore everything first. And that's impossible. Because there's so many different things to do on this earth. You cannot explore everything. It's impossible. Anyone who says they've tried everything is a liar, right? There's no way. There's so many different things in this world that you can try for mental health, for sports, activities, hobbies. It's endless. He's like, how is your slogan going to be explore everything and you're not going to explore the ocean with me? I was like, you son of a bitch. I'm like, fine. let's talk to him. And very quickly after that, we got a slot on the we're supposed to do 2023, and then the 2022 team backed out. So we're like, screw it, let's take the 22 team. So what we ended up doing was the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge is now called the World's Toughest Row. So what we set out to do is we flew to the Canary Islands in at Brain in La Gomera, sorry. We flew to La Gomera in Spain, which is an island just off the coast of Africa, and it was a 3,000-mile row to Antigua in the Caribbean, right? Now, this is a race of about, there was 43 boats, 43 teams the same year we did it, and there was four of us total. So what you do is it's a 28-foot rowboat. It's 5 feet wide, and there's a cabin in the front, cabin in the back. So two people are rowing for 2 hours while the other two people are sleeping, eating, you know, doing their business in the bucket, whatever you got to do. And then you switch 24/7 rowing nonstop. And so the pace that we're on day 16, and the pace that we were on, we would have done it in about 45 ish days. So, hold on 1 second.
So if you just joining or about to kick off, he's on his way on his rowboat quest across the Atlantic, and here he's back.
You there?
Yep, gotcha.
Oh, I can't hear you. 1 second. Give me 1 second. I'm sorry.
If anyone has questions, just chime in now as we get ready to close out.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
Oh, I can't hear you. What's going on here? So if you can hear me, my battery was dying, and I didn't realize my phone was or my computer wasn't plugged in. I can't hear you, though. 1 second.
This message is from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Did you serve in the military? If so, you can obtain a free lifetime pass to more than 2,000 federal recreation sites. These sites are located across more than 400 million acres of public lands, including national parks, wildlife refuges, and forests. The lands host activities to fit any lifestyle: hiking, biking, fishing, camping, and much more. Gold Star families are also eligible for these free lifetime passes. Plus, they cover entrance fees for a driver and all passengers in a car, or up to three additional adults at sites that charge per person. Obtaining one is easy. Just go to the National Park Service website, nps.gov, or the National Park Service app.
Okay, right, can you hear me?
I got you. Okay.
I didn't realize my computer was unplugged, so it died on me. I had to reconnect everything. My bad.
All right. So you were, I guess, 16 days in. You told us what you were doing, 2 hours on, 2 hours off, always rowing, and then bam.
Yeah, so we were looking at about 45 days is how long it would have taken us. About 3 o'clock on December 28th of 2022, I had just gotten done with my shift at 3 a.m., and I get in the back cabin and I go to lay down. And when you're doing that row, the second you close your eyes, you're sleeping, right? Cause you're exhausted, right? You're rowing for 12 hours a day. And every time you go to lay down, right, luckily the thing that the military gave me is my ability to fall asleep quickly. So I was sleeping, and based off of our records and everything, about 3:30 in the morning, we got broadsided. Now, the day before, we were in a pretty bad storm. It was about a 4-day storm, and we had gotten pushed 80 miles south. And so we had to keep going west. So we had to turn our boat straight west. Now, the storm and the waves were coming south. So now the winds were anywhere from like 40 to 50 nautical miles. That's a pretty quick wind, right, for a tiny little rowboat. So what we think happened is we checked the wave status at that time. We got hit by about a 40-foot wave. Wow. And what happened is a lot of these 40 footers, they would hit us and we'd ride it. But if it crested on us right as it hit the boat, it would turn our boat completely sideways. And what happens with the wind is when a wind is blowing along the wave, so the waves are going this way and the wind shoots down the wave and shoots up at a higher rate. And so we think we were hit by about a 70 mile an hour wind and it capsized our boat. We fell off of the wave because we got hit so hard. I woke up and it sounded like a freight train. I thought we got hit by a ship, you know, by the power of the force. And I was knocked out immediately. And based off the story of the other guys, I was out for about 5 minutes. And what had happened was all I felt was the side of the boat hit me in the face. And I woke up upside down and the boat was upside down and stuck. And my cabin was filling up with water. Now, these cabins are supposed to be air sealed. And I felt around and I could feel water coming up from a few different areas. So I went to there's a porthole in the back on top, now on the bottom. So I went over and I grabbed the porthole. I undid the latch, pulled up as hard as I can and latched it again. There was still water coming through. There was an LED light on the ceiling, which is now on the ground. And I could feel water coming from that. And I look over at the window and I was 2 feet underwater. Wow. And there was about 8 inches of water inside the cabin with me. And it was filling up quick. So it was pitch black, you know, it's 3 o'clock in the morning and we had no light at all. So I start feeling around. Luckily I found my headlamp and I put it on my head and I start looking around and then I saw how much water was in there and I start freaking out. I did my best to reach around to try to find something useful. But with how quick the water was filling up, I started banging on the side of the boat, yelling to Chad. Chad and Will were on the deck and Tommy was in the front cabin. So Chad had to dive underneath. Now, the way the boat was set up, there's the deck and then down and then footwells where the rowing paddle or the rowing feet rest were. So there's about a foot gap. So Chad dove underneath and went into that footwell and he had about this much space so he could breathe. And I had to have him help me pry the door open because of the force of the water on the outside. I couldn't push the door open. So because it was still pretty air pressurized inside there too. So that's a lot of force getting pushed against it. So between the two of us, we opened it up. He dove underneath right away and I waited until the water was all the way up to my neck and I was panicking. I usually do pretty good in water, but not 900 miles in the middle of the Atlantic in a 40-foot swell storm. So I started freaking out a little bit and I took two breaths and I said, dude, you got to go. And so I took a deep breath and I dove down. Now I went straight up into the footwells thinking that I would get some air, but I didn't think that back aft of the boat had filled up with so much water, the boat had sank. So when I go up and hit my head on top of the footwell, there's no air up there. And so I breathed in a bunch of water and I swallowed a bunch of water and I started panicking. So I dove, it's about 3 feet down and then 3 feet back up. So when I came out of the water, I grabbed the rope on the side of the boat and I started throwing up immediately. And within seconds, we get hit by another wave. I hit my head on the side of the boat and I wake up underwater, holding onto the rope still. I must have only been out for a second. It couldn't have been long. But I remember coming up and freaking out and breathing again. I sucked in a bunch more water. So I come up and I start throwing up and dry heaving. And I'm just trying to get as much water out. And I felt like I was drowning. There's a thing called dry drowning. When you inhale so much water, what happens is your lungs have so much water inside of it and it gets sucked into all those air pockets. Your body can't retain enough oxygen. So I was struggling. So they had already pulled the life raft and the life raft was floating in the way. Cause when they cut the life raft down, they accidentally cut the rope that connected it to the boat. So I swam to the life raft, jumped inside and I put my feet in it and I put my hands out and I started swimming back towards the boat and I grabbed a rope on the side of the boat. The rope was only about a quarter inch thick. So every time we got hit by a wave, it would rip the rope out of my hands. So from here all the way down, I had a cut mark. This was all the way down to the bone, and this had all the fat and muscle hanging out. It was disgusting. So every time water got in it, it was just the nerves. Oh, my God. I screamed every time. So while this was going on, Tommy was in the front cabin gathering supplies because he still had air in his cabin. Will was underneath with the bilge pump, just pumping to keep that water out so Tommy could get all the supplies that we need. Chad went to the side of the boat and grabbed a knife and started cutting off all the supplies we needed that were on the side of the boat, like our go bag that had, like, I think we had a parachute flare. It had a sat phone and a VHF radio. Or I'm sorry, the VHF radio was in the cab. We had water and there was supposed to be a bunch of food in there too, which we found out the hard way that we didn't have any food. All we had was a bag of candy. So Tommy and Will end up getting out, getting into the life raft. We tie up to the boat There was a rope on the side of the life raft, and so we just tied to that, figuring we'd be fine. Within 15 minutes, we get hit by another wave, and it rips the boat off the life raft, so we lose the boat. Now, at this time, we're northwest of Cape Verde, about 900 miles off the coast of Africa, in 40-foot swells in the middle of the night with four guys that weigh about 200 pounds in a 3-foot by 3-foot life raft. Not comfortable. So when the sun came up, we started doing inventory and looking through all our stuff to just figure out what we have. The sat phone got wet and wouldn't turn on, so we had no contact with anyone. We all had personal devices. They're called EPIRBs, and they immediately go off when they hit water. So the U.S. Coast Guard confirmed that our EPIRBs went off. I'll come back to that in a minute. So we're sitting inside this boat, and they always told us 18 hours to rescue. We're like, all right, 18 hours. We set the clock. We're like, we're going to get rescued by 9 o'clock tonight. It was like 9 or 10 or whatever. And so we started doing Mayday calls every 30 minutes. We turn the radio on. We'd say, Mayday, Mayday, Mayday. This is Whoopi crew. Our boat capsized. We're in a life raft. We need rescue. And we would just continue doing that throughout the day. Now, back to when I first got in the life raft, when Chad was cutting off everything off the side of the boat, he grabbed the bag and I threw it in. And then he handed me the knife because he had to swim over and grab something and come back. So I put the knife in my mouth because I don't want the knife to poke a hole in the bottom of the life raft, right? That'd be a bad day. So he comes back, hands me something. I go to grab it. Now, mind you, my right hand, I'm holding on to the rope on the side of the boat to keep the life raft connected. I grab it with my left hand. I throw it in. I got a knife in my mouth. I'm going to grab it. We get nailed by a 40-foot wave, and it rips the rope out of my hand. I go, fuck, just yell at the top of my lungs. The knife pops out right into the top tube of the life raft. So we're stranded at sea in a life raft that's deflating. So luckily, I think quickly, I throw the knife as far as I can, and I jam my thumb inside, and I plug the hole. And it actually stopped the leak. So here we are in the middle of the day. Life raft is half sunk, and our sat phone doesn't work. Every 30 minutes when we turn the radio on to call, we pump up the life raft. This is a tiny little dinky pump that came with it. So we're just sitting here just pumping, trying to make sure this thing doesn't sink. So we start looking around. We figure out that we have four bottles of water. They're 1.5 liters each. We have a bag of candy, which is, I think it was around 400 calories. That's all we had. All right. The life raft was supposed to have a bunch of food and stuff, but we didn't see it. It either fell out or it wasn't in there. We kept banging our pretty much all day. What kept us like busy is we take that sat phone and we just smack it, try to get all that water out of there. Then we turn it on, nothing. Damn it. Turn it back off. And throughout the day, we were getting hit by 30, 40 foot waves constantly. Now the life raft had a fabric cover over it. So we were covered, right? But that's a fabric cover. Every time a wave would hit the side, another head injury. So now I'd already been unconscious for 5 minutes, got knocked out the second time on the side of the boat, constantly getting my head nailed for 18 hours. Now, when the sun went down, that's when things started to get rough for all of us. It got to a point where I started to really think, like, what the hell did I just do to myself? Like, what did I do? What was this worth? You know, like, I'm going to lose my family. And, you know, I had regrets with the family, but the only regret that I could think about or things that I never tried was stand-up comedy. I had never done comedy. And that's something that just was killing me because it's something I've been wanting to do my whole life. I love comedy. I've been a huge fan of comedy since I was a kid. I've seen every comedy special on Amazon, YouTube, Netflix, whatever. I've seen them all. And it's something that really stung. And so I kept holding on to that. Like, I need to do comedy. And then I started thinking about the nonprofit and started thinking about all the veterans that I had already helped and thinking about all the ones that, you know, I wouldn't be able to help if I didn't make it. Now, I'm not saying I'm the only one helping vets, but this passion of mine with the nonprofit is so deeply ingrained in my heart. I didn't want to lose it. And, you know, obviously I didn't want to lose my kids and my family too, but I started holding on to that. You know what? I've seen my future and this is not how it ends. I know where I'm going to be in 5 years and it's not going to be in a casket. I got things I need to do with my life. And I already said that, you know, a gun couldn't kill me. Cancer couldn't kill me. Fuck it. The ocean's not going to kill me. I'm going to make it. And I kept that with myself constantly. I did a lot of meditation too, because there's nothing else to do. We're not going anywhere. We can't look outside because we're getting blasted by waves left and right. So I did a lot of meditation while I was sitting there. And I want to say about 2 hours before we got rescued, we turn the radio on. We do a mayday call. Mayday, mayday, mayday. This is Whoopi Crew. We're in a life raft. We need rescue. And we heard click, click. And I was a 911 dispatcher for 8 years. I know somebody heard us, right? Now, the way these radios work, these handhelds can only go 7 miles. So we can only hear if somebody's within 7 miles. But we must have been right at a peak of a wave, right as that boat was at a peak of a wave. Because they have transponders. They have stuff that expands their vision or their view because of all the cables and towers and stuff they have on their ships. And so I'm like, somebody heard us. I was like, say it again. But this time say, you know, mayday, mayday, mayday. This is Whoopi Crew. We cannot hear you. If you can hear us, give us 2 mic clicks. And we hear click, click. And all 4 of us just start bawling. And we're like, oh, my God. We're going to make it. This is still fairly new in my memory too. So every time I tell the story, it's like reliving it, you know? So having that peace of knowing that somebody's coming, oh my God, it was the best feeling in the world. And, you know, we're sitting there for an hour, like, where the hell are these guys? Right. Because, most ships could only go about 7 or 8 nautical miles an hour out there because of the storm. And these ships were rocking 10 degrees side to side. That's a lot for a big ship, right? So eventually we start seeing lights and we're just like, yes, I was so happy. I cannot wait to get on that boat. Now, we thought it was a rescue boat that was supposed to be with the race, which was a sailboat. We're like, okay, sweet. Right. I was like, that's a lot of lights for a sailboat. I was like, I don't think that's a sailboat. And so after about an hour and a half ish, the boat had to go south, come around and then start going back north because of the way the waves were. So they came around on the west side of us. And our raft was, the opening was facing north. And so we didn't see what kind of ship it was until the bow of the boat came in front of the life raft. And I look over and I go, holy crap. It was a 580-foot tanker ship. And so I look at the height of that thing. I was like, we found out that it was about 35-foot climb. So we had to climb a 35-foot ladder while my hand is busted open and completely destroyed. So luckily we had these rowing gloves. So I put the rowing gloves on so I could climb. They decided I needed to go first because all day I'd been throwing up because I had all that water in my lungs and in my stomach. And I was actually starting to dry drown. If we would have stayed out there for another 10 hours or so, I probably would have died. So when I get up into the ship, I look up and I see these 19 beautiful humans, these Filipinos, Croatians, and Ukrainians standing there. And I go to get over the top and I'm looking at it. I was like, these tiny little guys aren't going to be able to lift my ass over. And then these guys grab me like a child and just throw me over. Like their adrenaline must have been spiked. And the second my feet hit the deck, I looked at the first guy and I just grab him. I'm like, I love you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I was like, go save my friends. So Will got up. And then when Chad decided to start climbing, he went and grabbed it, and he's got really bad shoulders. So he dislocated his shoulder as he started to climb. He fell back into the water. His feet landed in the life raft and his body landed in the water. Now, a life raft to ship transfer is one of the most dangerous things in the world that anyone can do, especially when you got 40-foot waves and the boat's rocking 10 degrees left and right. So luckily, right as his body hit the water, he got hit by a wave right as Tommy leaned out and grabbed him by the chest and pulled him back into the life raft. So they had lost the rope, and the captain of this ship, the guy who was driving that night, his name was Jean Paul from, he's from, the Philippines. I don't remember what city, but Jean Paul was the best driver ever because he slowly kept maneuvering that boat and just pulled forward just a little bit so the guys could run down the deck and then throw another rope. Chad got up and then they pulled Tommy up, and then the 4 of us got together, and I leaned in and I grabbed Tommy and I kissed him on the forehead. I was like, it's over. And then the chief comes up to us and in like a Russian accent, he goes, "What are you doing here?" We're like, "Well, we're rowing a boat across the ocean." He looks down at the life. He's like, "That's not a rowboat." It's like, "I know." It's like, "Our boat sank. We've been in a life raft for 18 hours. They're like, "Oh my God." And I asked him, I was like, "Where are we going?" And in a Russian accent, he goes, "Better you don't know." I was like, "Oh my God, we're going to be slaves in Russia." And he's like, "No, worse, Canada." We're like, "Yes, at least it's the right continent." And so they take us in and they get us changed. They bring us, I still have the tin. I hate these like sugar cookies. I don't remember exactly what they're called, but they're like, they're chalky and gross. I hate those cookies more than anything in the world. I ate the whole damn tin. I was like, "Oh my God, actual food." Cause we were eating rehydrated meals the whole trip. And I got really bad seasickness the first week. So I was only eating tortillas and peanut butter. I still can't look at peanut butter. That shit's gross to me now. But, so they bring us up to the chow hall and we go in and there's four plates sitting there with prime rib, a bowl of apples and oranges, spaghetti, water, apple juice. And I'm just like, I started crying. I cried harder when I saw the food than I did when we got rescued. Yes, Danish wedding cookies. That's exactly what they were. And they're, you know, they were from the Netherlands too. That boat was Dutch. And so we started eating. Then we went up to the captain's quarters to call. We called the president of Fight or Die. And when he answers the phone, he goes, "Hey guys, how's it going?" And Will goes, "How's it going? What are you talking about?" So we found out, after we got off the boat, after the investigation and everything, we found out that the United States Coast Guard got our signal that we were stranded and that our boat had sank. They sent that to Cape Verde Coast Guard. Cape Verde Coast Guard had so many false alarms that night because a lot of people in the row were capsizing, but these boats are made to autocorrect. Ours was the only one that didn't autocorrect that night. So because there were so many false alarms, they deleted our alarm because they assumed it was a false alarm. So NATO currently is investigating the Cape Verde Coast Guard because of us. So we were pissed, you know, that nobody was searching for us.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing is, this ship was leaving South Africa to go to Montreal, Canada, and their boat was delayed 12 hours from leaving port. If they wouldn't have been there, the time that they were the only ship in 500 nautical miles. In 500 nautical miles, that's like a 3-day rescue.
Yep.
Our boat, our life raft was deflating. We had 10% battery left on our radio. We had no backup battery. We had no sat phone. We had no way of calling anyone else. We had one parachute flare. We should not be here, but we are. So if that doesn't tell you that, you know, I'm deeply, deeply embedded in this mission because of how many times I should have died in my life. Not to mention a motorcycle accident and multiple, you know, shit on deployments. And after that, we spent 13 days on board with these guys. Initially, they put us in orange jumpsuits and I'm like, "Oh my God, we're going to be having to work and everything." Like, no, it was just like a deployment. We just watch movies. I did a lot of meditation. I'll tell you this much. One night I couldn't sleep and I sat through and I went over every single jujitsu move that I know. And I essentially just started playing jujitsu chess with myself. And, I was shocked at how much I know. And it's actually made my jujitsu a lot better. I started thinking about all the things that I still want to do with my life, but also started thinking I need to be more cautious with my choices now. Yes. I got a family. And I almost lost all of them, you know, and, you know, I still deeply embed my life into Warrior's Next Adventure, but I've learned how to say no a little bit more. I've learned how to spend a little bit more time with my family and a little bit more time home. I used to have FOMO, you know, fear of missing out. So I always had to be doing something, and I've gotten a lot better over the last year. Just being okay with relaxing. And that's something that I've struggled with for a long time. And I can sit at home for the day with the family and not do a damn thing for work and be just fine with it. All right. Even with that, I still run four businesses. I'm getting ready to open my fourth one. They're all fairly successful. I help advise 23 different nonprofits. I've helped start I think 17 businesses now. I don't remember exactly what I'm at. I don't have the numbers in front of me. I continue to help open new nonprofits. I continue to expand. I continue to do all the things that I want to do because, hey, I'm alive. I have a purpose. I have a mission, and I got things to do. And I kept telling everybody, like, I got shit to do. I don't have time to die. I said the same thing when I had cancer. I got shit to do. I don't have time to die. Cancer is not going to beat me. And, you know, the big aha moment was, you know, that night, we wouldn't be alive if we didn't do everything for each other. Everything was for each other. Every single thing we did. Chad dove underneath to help save me. I held onto that life raft and destroyed my hand and destroyed my thumb to try to keep us alive. You know, Tommy dug through and gathered all the supplies we needed to survive. Will dove underneath and sat in the water the whole time Tommy was in there pumping out water. We all worked together, you know, and if there was anybody else out there, I don't know if we would have made it. We had the perfect team. There's a documentary coming out about it called Fight or Die, and I believe it's going to be coming out in the next few months. They're pushing for Netflix. I'm supposed to get a cut of it very soon, and the trailer alone is, wow. I watched it, and it was unbelievable. And if anyone Googles Nick Ron, Care 11 News, Care 11 News did a really nice special about the rescue, and there's actual video footage of the rescue in that interview. So if you want to see some of the craziness that we went through, you can actually see us climbing the rope to get into the boat out of the life raft. There's a lot of pictures of us on the ship. We made really good friends with all the guys in the boat. Paul, Alan. I'm a cook, so I made best friends with the chef right away. And New Year's Eve, we actually had a huge festival. We had a huge party. The Filipinos, they know how to party, man. And I had told them that I make pizza.
Karaoke.
Oh, yeah, they're great. And so I found every single ingredient that I needed to make American pizza, and none of them have had American pizza before. So I made two giant pizzas. We had lumpia. We had pandesal, like all kinds of different Filipino delicacies. We had like six different kinds of steak. We had a bunch of chicken, everything. We were eating that food for like 4 days because we made so much. We hung out with the guys. We played cards. I beat every single guy on that ship in chess, except for Alan. Alan beat me twice. The guy was a genius. And I had a lot of time to contemplate, you know, what my next move is going to be. And last year was a really rough year for me. I had about 45 days of migraines. I had a pretty bad TBI, and I want to thank Marcus Institute of Brain Health, out in Aurora, Colorado. I went out there for an assessment, and they had me come back for a 3-week outpatient intensive course, and they really helped bring me back. If you're a veteran with a TBI and PTSD, please go to the Marcus Institute for Brain Health website. Go get help. This is the best therapy I've ever had in my life. They have EMDR therapy, art therapy. Which art therapy, when I first went in there, and she's like, I want you to draw a tree. I was like, I'm going to draw a stupid tree. This is dumb. And I'm drawing this tree the whole time. I'm like, this is stupid. I got to hate this. And the next thing you know, I draw this like mural. And the lady sits there and just starts psychoanalyzing me. And I start bawling. And I'm like, what are you doing to me? Like, this lady was we called her the voodoo witch doctor, because she can just dig inside your brain just based off of art. She was one of the most caring, thoughtful, intuitive people I've ever met in my life. The behavioral health there was great. The physical therapy was great. And I'm down to like one migraine a week, if not one every other week. Like I said, 45 days straight of migraines. I almost got rid of the nonprofit completely. I was in a rough spot. And thankfully, my girlfriend was paying attention. And ironically, she reached out to Steve from X22, who called me back in 2020 on the crisis line and trying to figure out what he's going to do with his life. He just so happened in April of last year, he wanted to run his first fishing retreat. And between the two of them, they bought me a plane ticket. They made sure I didn't have anything on my schedule. And then they told me, hey, you're going down to Florida for the fishing retreat. I'm like, because I was saying no to everything. I didn't leave my house till March. We got home January 10th, and I'm like, nope, I'm not going anywhere. I want to be safe. So I went down to Florida, and this retreat was amazing. Check out X22 Adventures down in Florida. And Steve would actually be a great interview too. I'll get you his contact info. I love Steve to death. Definitely. He was also a firefighter too. So we go down there and we spend 4 days iguana hunting, which was awesome. We used 22s and pellet guns, and we actually ate them too. They taste delicious. We went fishing and we just hung out. It was a great time. And then at the end, he had a bunch of different fishing stuff donated. And then he hands me a fishing pole. He's like, "Hey, what's that say on there?" And it said, "Staff Sergeant Nicholas Ron, OIF, you know, Afghanistan, Iraq." And then he had all my dates on there. And I'm like, "Dude, what the hell is this?" And mind you, I was thinking about getting rid of the nonprofit. I was getting ready to stop everything. And he says to me, he says that none of this would happen without you. He's like, "I wouldn't be here without you. These veterans wouldn't be here without you. This nonprofit wouldn't exist without you." He's like, "I've taken hundreds of veterans fishing and helped them get a new perspective on life because of you." And I just break down in tears and I start crying. And I was like, "You son of a bitch." And it brought me back. So what I would say to veterans that are struggling is reach out to these organizations. You know, between myself, X22 Adventures, if you're a veteran with 80% or more disability, you qualify for a year scholarship of jiu-jitsu through We Defy Foundation. I've sent probably 75 veterans to go get a scholarship with those guys. There's plenty other organizations out there that are doing amazing things. Like I said, I give my life to veterans and I do everything I can to help vets find themselves. And the guy who I helped find himself helped me find myself again. So it's beautiful how there's that perfect circle. And then I went to Marcus right after that. And then in October, I went to the 3-week course and I'm back, baby.
Outstanding. Good. It's good to have you back. And I was going to say, while you were talking about wanting to live and all that stuff and that be with your family, it's full circle to that Skype call when you were in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
To your daughter.
100%.
It all is a big loop. Never-ending loop, and then back to Steve to get you back. It basically kicking your chest and say, "Let's go. You have more purpose to do," and that's outstanding. It's been great this last 86 minutes talking, or without the software glitch, but we've been talking.
Yeah, for a sorry while. About that.
And now you're gonna be on my buddy's show on Sunday, Homefront Sit Rep with Dave Willis. He was on here chiming in a bunch. He liked it. He's gonna have a blast with you on Sunday night. How did people get in contact with you or with the foundation, with the Warriors Next Adventures?
Well, I made it easy. Everything is Warriors Next Adventure. Our email is warriorsnextadventure.com, warriorsnextadventure@gmail.com. Warriorsnextadventure.com is all of our info. All of our social media, mostly Instagram and Facebook, and then LinkedIn as well. It's all Warriors Next Adventure to make it easy for you. Our 24/7 crisis line, if you go to warriorsnextadventure.com, right at the top there, it actually has the number on there. It's my personal cell phone number, so you get me. If you're not in crisis, but you need help getting connected to services, call that number, and we'll help you get connected. If you don't have your VA claim, go get your VA claim. Stop pulling the tough guy syndrome and thinking that you're fine. The one thing that I tell vets all the time, the only thing that somebody is entitled to is their VA benefits. Because if you sign that dotted line to serve for the military, the VA said that if you get hurt, we will be there for you. You deserve those benefits. You earn those benefits. Go get them. You are not hurting anybody by going to get your benefits. You're not taking it away from any other veteran. So get that thought out of your mind. Go get help. Go talk to somebody. And if you need help and you got no one to talk to, give me a call.
Outstanding. Nick, this has been great chatting with you. I know you're going to have more awesome things in the future. So I will look out for that. And I'll definitely listen to you with Willis on Sunday night, as long as I'm not driving anywhere. But check that out as well to support my brother and support you. So thanks again for coming on and on short notice, too. So that was awesome.
Yeah, no problem. It worked out.
Outstanding. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thanks for checking us out and being a part of the Misfit Nation show. Don't forget to visit our website at themisfitnation.com. That's themisfitnation.com. Check out all our past episodes and get some of the great Misfit Nation gear for you and your family. As always, be humble, stay hungry, and keep hustling, because we are
Misfit Nation. Misfit Nation.